Hello, fellow listeners. This is the 9th episode of Technology Icing Podcast, and I am your host, Karan Bhandari, technical lead at Societe Generale, currently contributing as .NET, Mongo, Angular, React, Cube, SSAS, as well as Spark Developer. And in this episode, we are covering web performance. Your website performance matters a lot because you need to retain users. You will have increased sign-up time if you focus on your boot time and keep the user engaged. Sometimes you are gripped with difficult problems such as handling large files, a lot of data, a lot of computations, and you will have extremely good user retention and a good product experience if you think about performance during the course of your development. You ought to be mobile friendly, and even in the best of the countries, people end up using phones in areas which don't have decent network. Even especially when you're going underground, your web page should have cached critical assets in your local storage or in your manifest cache, so that you know you have a decent offline experience after the initial page load. Now, in order to increase performance, what do you do? It impacts your bottom line. And it is very important for the business because performance is all about user experience. And in order to do that, you need to make not a lot of changes. You can start with small and iteratively build on it to improve little by little. For the first page load, and as well as during the rest of the performance, I'll share some tips and tricks that will help you to surmount some of the absurdities that you have encountered over time. First is your basic programming techniques. Be aware of your data structures. Sometimes when you take over the internet solutions, for example, the Fibonacci numbers, you just make a recursive call onto the sub-solutions and your system will, your browser will actually hang and ask you to force kill even after you give an instruction for around 200 Fibonacci numbers. But all of a sudden, when you start maintaining a cache, for example, you cache whatever value you have pre-computed, you will see a lot of performance improvement. That technique is called dynamic programming. For example, when you compute Fibonacci of 4, you're going to compute Fibonacci of 3 and 2. And when you're computing Fibonacci of 3, you're going to compute 2 and 1 once again. So, you know, in your right-hand side, you have already computed 2, and your left-hand side, you're again calling 2. So, you're kind of calling your functions about twice. Dynamic programming is one, and then the next is you can migrate to HTTP2. Most of the problems, performance problems of HTTP 1.2, not most, some of them are kind of mitigated with HTTP2 because this actually allows concurrent requests and it helps a lot. Sometimes your images can take up a large portion of your page load. So what you could do is you could use a sprite image where have you seen sprite sheets where a person is, suppose I'm standing with my hands to the side of my legs, and then I raise my hand little by little, 20 degree, 30 degree, till I become 90 degree with my leg, and then ultimately become 180 degree, and people print it out on hundreds of pages, and when you kind of open the page immediately, so all the pages immediately, it will show as if you're images are moving. But imagine now you put this onto one sheet, you put all the 10 images or 100 images onto one sheet, and you just display a portion of it on your page, and that way your website just loads one image, and with the help of one image, you can load hundreds of images. And one more important hint is you could use placeholders. For example, placeholder.it has explained the concept of what is placeholder, where you just put a kind of blurry image, and then when the user actually sees it, when the scroll and the on visible happens, or when the component is loaded, you can make a real load to that image, in the sense you can asynchronously load that image. And don't try to use animated GIFs quite often. Use a video instead, because video can help with streaming, and respect the viewport width. For example, you should look for Android 2.0 Froyo devices will have like extremely weak JavaScript processing engine. So you have to cater for mobile first and then move to desktops, because there is CSS provides hints for mobile, and you need not load everything for all kinds of viewports and sizes. You ensure that, and every time the user makes a network call, ensure you monitor it. There is Kibana, there is Azure Application Insights, and all of them can be configured to have a performance log, and it can intercept your HTTP request of your web API or your Spring Boot server, and you can see how well is your web, is your REST API being invoked. And one more thing is for your JavaScript or for the artifacts that have been created in the dist folder from your Angular or React, put those JavaScripts onto a CDN. So what a CDN does is, instead of putting all your JavaScript's assets onto one server, the CDN will distribute your JavaScript assets to Russia, India, Asia Pacific region, Australia, US, and it'll people using those JavaScripts will get a faster load time, because they are loaded from the same country rather than going cross country and making the network call. And the next hint is using the system fonts. I know that CSS has come with rich font embedding features, but I recommend that you try to use your system fonts as much as possible, because if you need not load a font, that's savings. And sometimes if you want to buy some time, try using some degree of animations. For example, you could load the headings and you could show the blurry image of the lists, like how Android, some of the apps are doing it. And try to, you know, buy some time from the user. And you could use some resource hints. For example, there is async, there is defer. So async and defer will help the JavaScript assets to be loaded sometime later. Maybe the basic HTML is loaded first, and then you can defer the loading of some JavaScript resources sometime later. I think Webpack offers a very good a technique to perform those kinds of optimization. Webpack has got something called as lazy loading. And beyond that, beyond lazy loads, you can also do something like code splitting. For example, imagine that you're going onto a website and the user is looking at a dashboard. Sometimes when you make single page apps, you tend to load all the components up front. Okay, the dashboard components, the detail component, everything. But what you could do is, sometimes when you click on the detail, you may need to open high charts, and high charts has a world map, and the world map will load some 8 MB file, but you need not load it up front. You need not bundle it and minify it in the same. You can actually split it. And you can use chunks. So there is an optimization technique called the chunking, and then you can chunk your high chart assets to be loaded sometime later. Only suppose when the user is viewing that particular component, so on component mount or on init in terms of Angular, and that really helps your resources to be loaded later. One is one technique is HTML async at defer, and the other one is with the help of Webpack. When you use Webpack is nothing but a system that allows you to minify, optimize, uglify, split chunks, runtime chunks, setting your input format, putting an output format, loading some preloaders, Babel, all that. It's all done with a simple configuration, and you need not worry about some of the details. It's a build system for the web, essentially. And make sure that sometimes when people use web components, you need not load some heavy assets like AGGrid, HighCharts again and again. Those are some of the big offenders. Try to load it once and share that chunk across everything. Not all JavaScript files ought to be loaded initially. And try to have something like a device cloud or Perfecto or Xamarin Cloud to see how your app is doing. But if you don't have a time and setup for your infrastructure, just open Command Shift and I, press the Chrome, it'll open the Chrome Developer Tool. And there is an option to give it a 2G connection, a 3G connection, and you can test how your app is doing with that. And I think a big and important consideration is looking at how your API is sending data to your web page. Sometimes you may need to load a list of thousands of posts or tweets, and sending everything in the JSON body upfront is not intelligent. First is you can use paging, but something better that you can do is using the push stream content. And imagine in your web API or in your Java, you're using some generators. Generators are nothing but you don't execute the entire for loop on your data structure, but instead, as soon as a for loop executes and you maybe are ready with hundreds of like about 100 items in the list, you can type something called as yield. And once the yield is transmitted to your web page, then you can use push stream content to send data to your client. And push stream content will actually push data to the stream that your web page has opened with your server. And you can stream, even if you don't know the actual size up front, it is okay. Push stream content will ensure that. So before I jump more into push stream content, let me tell you there are two kinds of sending everything. One is a buffered, and other one is streaming. If you see if I loaded a 1 GB video upfront in your web page will cry and will ask you to force kill the browser. That's why people use streaming, like that is stream content for pulling data from a stream. So example is, you know, a 1 hour video is there, and you ask your web browser to pull the stream content. So streaming content is pulling, and push stream content is where the server pushes data to your web page. And sometimes there may be a big gap in the events. For example, it's not available immediately. Like for example, you want an operator to click on yes or no to do something. In that case, do not use push stream content. You may use something like WebSockets or SignalR, which is like an evolution on top of WebSockets. And after you receive the data, you want to intelligently display the data onto some grids, some charts, or D3, C3. Then what you could do is you can keep your data in your IndexedDB, where you can actually perform all things like joining, aggregations, within your IndexedDB instead of burdening your main UI thread with all the work. And if you are bold enough, you could try the service worker, you know, the web workers. Web worker is something where you cannot execute UI related things like click handlers or drawing or rendering, but you can do computation. For example, the Fibonacci numbers could be computed in the web worker, and then it will not prompt the user to kill the web browser. One more thing that you can do is you can use WebAssembly. WebAssembly is nothing but C#, Java, C++ written for the web. So JavaScript is an interpreted language, and if you use compiled code, which is already interpreted and compiled, your performance almost has a 30 to 40% improvement because you're using native code rather than making someone interpret things for you. I think there is one more technique called as tree shaking. You could eliminate useless code, something that is not used by your code execution path. For example, your UI or your component or your directive is not able to reach some code. Then, you know, if you write tree shaking using Webpack or Parcel or Rollup, it will remove the dead code. So imagine an entire module, like you have moved to C3, but HiChat is still existing in your code base. The tree shaking will remove those paths for you, and it will identify things that could remove fruits that have become rotten. For a progressive app, I think you could remove useless things for even device-specific things. For example, in your mobile device, you may not render C3 or HiCharts or AGGrid, but you could only be sufficiently maintaining another image, like a pre-computed image that your Python or your MATLAB plot libraries have emitted, and you can render it as an image upfront instead of rendering a chart there. And that way it will avoid the JavaScript computations. React also has a lot of React. When you're using React, you could use a miniature version called pReact if you don't use all the features of React. And that's extremely small, less than 50 KB. And you could write extremely lean applications using pReact. But if you were to use React, you may need to be aware that try to be as much stateless as possible. Some early programmers, they are not aware of how maintenance of state can cause issues. Try to use more pure components rather than using states. And when you're tuned to the concept of functional programming, you will move towards immutable data structures. That is data structures. So for example, if I'm making a new person data structure, which has name, ID, and address in it. So I will not do something like person dot change the name to this or person dot change the age to this. I will actually create a new person object and send a new data structure. So then if you write functional code like this, where you're using immutable data structures and data structures that do not change, then you will promote easy parallelism. Because when you do parallelism, you need to worry about synchronization. And synchronization is not possible if you're using a shared, if you're using like the same data structure everywhere. Even if you see the React Redux philosophy is maintaining a single state, but when you perform your actions, you actually send a new state down and a new substate, and a single store is maintained because you don't know what updates what. And make sure before you update a component, there is a feature in React called should component update, where you actually check your states or your props or your UI elements to see if the state must undergo a change or not. And you can really save a lot of time by using should component update. And it'll be amazing if you could write a React with the newest version, because there they have a lot of helpers that help you to write pure functional code rather than using class-based things. But you cannot replace everything that is there class-based today with functional code, because a lot of code has been already written, and most likely you'll inherit something that is already production ready, and you may just be doing some optimizations on it. And ensure that you do not use a debug version. In your Webpack, there is a mode is called a production mode. Use a production mode and make sure you use the default minifiers, uglifiers. So minifiers is nothing but instead of writing my answer is equal to my first variable plus second variable, it will replace it with something like A is equal to B plus C, and internally it will know with what is the mapping between that. So it will send, instead of sending 300 kilobytes, it will send 20 kilobytes with all your white spaces gone, with all the long variable names gone. And do not try to use the full blown dependency, in the sense sometimes if you use something like Lodash, you'll have a lot of things within Lodash equal to filter, array manipulators. You don't need everything. You can use sub-modules of Lodash, and even Moment.js will load your French files, English files, Polish files. You don't need that because your programmers are not have written everything for English or for Chinese. You want to restrict your Lodash Moment.js locales to single ones. Take a look at your dependencies. Your dependency can be a big bottleneck, and try to use more of fragments, React fragments, and use less of inline functions, and try to bind it up front before actually executing the function again and again, because the view tends to be reloaded every time the virtual DOM changes. And when you click on a button, try to implement something called as a debounce technique, because what happens is sometimes the user types some object and you want to do like you want to show a drop down with dynamic menus. Like suppose you're typing Seattle SEA and you want Seattle Arabian Sea to come up in your drop down. Instead, what you can do is when you use debounce, you can wait for about 500 milliseconds till the user types at least 4-5 letters before you actually make a real web service call. Otherwise, your web service will be bombarded with a lot of requests. And throttling is a good way to, in your HTTP interceptors, you can ensure that, okay, only one call is made per second and not like a mad machine where when a user is like scrolling brutally and you load everything upfront. Use debounce to your advantage. And ES6 has got very good features and enhancements done to arrays. You can use map, you can use find, and you can use some reducers functions instead of writing your own. And even when you make a for loop, try to pass the answer to the UI upfront by using generators instead of doing the entire for loop upfront. And yeah, avoid using props in your initial state. And now in your Angular code, you also could use Webpack to do these things, to minify chunking. And beyond that, Angular has its own fundas or things that you can do. Like for example, try to avoid doing two-way data binding when you don't need it. There is a library called as bindOnce, where once it is shown on the UI, it forgets about it. You need not bind it again and again. That is if your use case demands it. And there is something called as onPushChangeListener, where you need not, where you explicitly ask the component to update. And you even lazy loading is still available here. And if when you are trying to build your application, your npm install and your npm test can take a lot of time. Try to only test those things that have changed, and try to use npm ci instead of npm install, and try to use a package log files, because when you use npm ci and npm versus npm install, then whatever you have mentioned in the package log, only those versions will be checked. It won't upgrade anything. If you use that caret symbol, the one with the hat, then it tries to look for the latest versions. But if you use a package log file, it will lock your specific versions. And if you're not using all the Babel functions, do not load the entire library upfront. Try to use a small chunk of it. Like if suppose you want to only load it for Chrome versions 40 and above, or if you're not trying to support IE users, then make sure you only load the specific things that you wanted. I think I've spoken a lot around our web optimization techniques. There's much more to it. I'll share some links in the notes below. Thank you for tuning in. And this is me, Karan Bhandari, signing off. Goodbye.